because a closer alternative reading of Nectar shows how much Rukmani has to sustain her. First, there is her marriage to Nathan, whom she not only loves but clearly desires. Next, there is a sense that despite the forces that drive Rukmani's family apart, they share a cohesiveness that many of us would wish for. There is Rukmani's love for nature, which buoys her spirit. And last, there is her essential kindness, a characteristic that allows her to sympathize with the daughter-in-law who shuns her, with the daughter who disappoints her, and ultimately, with the street urchin who becomes her new son. Also, there is her relationship with Kenny, the white doctor who is truly a man without a country. It would be easy to read Rukmani's relationship with Kenny as that of a colonizer and colonized. After all, Kenny's attitude towards the villagers' fatalistic acceptance of all the evils of a feudal society alternates between pity and disgust. He thinks of them as acquiescent imbeciles. He is forever berating Rukmani for her passivity, even as he helps her. Kenny is the benefactor. Rukmani is the recipient of his charity. But such a reading misses an essential element of Rukmani and Kenny's relationship. Rukmani constantly asserts her own humanity when interacting with him, asking him personal questions about the family he has left behind to draw out the truth. And to Kenny's declaration that there is no grandeur in want or in endurance, Rukmani has her own answer. Well, and what if we gave in to our troubles at every step? We would be pitiable creatures indeed to be so weak. For is not a man's spirit given to him to rise above his misfortunes? I would submit that Rukmani's answer suggests a courage and resilience that belie Kenny's accusations. Most important, it is Rukmani who makes Kenny re-examine his position and place in society, rather than the other way around. During one of their exchanges, she flatly states, "But this is not your country, and we are not your people. If you lived here, your own life, it still would not be." The assertion stuns Kenny, who confesses, "Sometimes I do not know which is my country. Until today, I had thought perhaps it was this." The exchange demonstrates a conversation between equals, not between benefactor and beneficiary. Given that the novel appears to be set during the waning years of the British Raj, Rukmani's statement assumes a broader anti-colonial weight. No matter how many of the Raj's foot soldiers had gone native, Markandeya seems to say, India still belonged to the Indians and not to the British. It is not too many novels that can make trenchant observations about colonialism and then 50-some years later still be relevant to our globalized age. But Markandeya has somehow pulled that off with Nectar in a Sieve. In its timeless evocation of the rural poor and its memorable portrait of one woman's fortitude, this is a novel that should captivate other generations of readers. Thridi Umrigar.